Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
All right, names. My family grew up, you know, starting with my grandpa. He played for 13 years. Dad seemed like he played forever, and that was my whole childhood. So I kind of grew up with, you know, Boone name and, oh, Bob Boone's son. You know, they just through Little League and all that, and you kind of deal with it. Actually, as a young man, when I got into college and professional, I got sick of hearing about my dad, and I got sick of hearing about my grandpa. I kind of resented it. I'm like, let's talk about I'm hitting 335. I don't give a shit who my dad is. Now, fast forward to adulthood and retired. I'm so proud of what my family's accomplished in the game. But for a while, especially when I was, you know, I was chasing my dream, I'm like, I'm sick of hearing about my name and what the guys before me had done. Your name, not from in a sports breath, but you go to Brigham Young University, and I think Brigham Young is your great-grandfather. Give me a name story. Was that anything for you growing up?
You know, Brett, that's a funny question because he was my great, great, great grandfather.
Oh, so it's one of those Daniel Boones for me.
Yeah. So, but because the school was named after it, that was like but it was funny. You know, I think it was enough distance that I knew that I was related to him, but I didn't, it was so far in the past that even the name Brigham Young University didn't, it was like, Steve Young going to Brigham Young University didn't really connect. Like I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, outside of New York City, trying to, you know, we used to go down to high school and go, there was a little a hole in the fence at Shea Stadium where we go watch the Mets play. And we tried to sneak in. But so when I went out there to school, it didn't really connect. And then when I finally played, I remember I played at Colorado a game. Jim McMahon had gotten hurt and I played and did really well. And so afterwards it had hit that Brigham Young's grandson, you know. And so the next Tuesday, I'm in New York for Good Morning America, talking about that connection that you just asked me about, right? And for me, it was like, yeah, I knew about it, but it wasn't like, but now it was a thing. Right. Now it was like, you're on national TV talking about it, you better have something to say. And so I think the initial story was big. And then I also feel like it kind of died out. Like I just didn't really come up a ton. Right. And it didn't help me, by the way. I showed up at Brigham Young University as the eighth string quarterback. So I remember going in the locker room and they had all the names of each position and all the people playing the position. It was quarterback. And I was listed eighth. And I was like, how are there eight guys? Like there can't be eight quarterbacks. And I was like, well, must be alphabetical. Like, there's no way I'm the eighth string quarterback, right? There's got to be. And then I saw McMahon, Bibee, like, went out. I was like, no, it's not alphabetical, bro. You are eighth string. So my name and being related to Brigham Young did nothing for me, bro. Nothing.
Eighth string. I couldn't imagine coming in eighth string. I might pack it in.
Well, back then, you know, if you wanted to play in the pros and get a pro-like experience in college in the 1980s, everyone's running the wishbone. Everyone walked the deer option. There was only three schools throwing the football really kind of in a pro-like way. And that was University of Miami, Florida, Stanford, and BYU. Three schools. So all the guys that wanted to play pro ball would pile in there. And so I didn't know there was going to be eight or I wouldn't have signed up for it, right? But I think there was just it was one of those places where you could take 15 guys, they all give it a shot because they wanted to play pro ball. And that was one of the places where you could really do it and learn it.
Interesting. Yeah. And now I put it together when you tell me the Brigham Young, it's like, no, he was a distant grandpa. So I could imagine you're going to that, it was a Good Morning America and you're calling like distant aunts. You know anything about this Brigham Young guy?
I had a couple stories I've read in the book before, but yeah. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm just saying that it was far enough away that it didn't really, growing up in the East Coast.
Right. Wasn't a big deal.
It didn't really come up a ton, but it did come up where I first played and I was on national TV talking about
it. No, when I said Daniel Boone, I was half kidding, but one day, like during a rain delay in Baltimore, you know, the press, they don't have anything to do. We're sitting there for 2 hours to see if, you know, we're going to get a window to finish this game. So I got a couple guys come up to me like, hey, you know, I was bored. I didn't have anything to do. So I started, you know, kind of researching your family. You know, you're a distant relative of Daniel Boone. You know, you hear that, you think of the coonskin hat. And I'm going, is this guy serious? You know, it's come now all of a sudden it starts going around. Now they're asking my dad about it. Now my brother's in the league. Hey, you're Daniel. You're the kin of Daniel Boone. And we're going, well, that's what you tell me. I have no clue, but that's what you tell me.
Go with it. Well, now you go to Ancestry.com. Just plug it in. You'll know exactly how you're.
I think I'm like six generations removed, but apparently, yeah, he was. I didn't see him in any Christmases of mine, so I'll believe the story.
Right.
NFL draft just happened. Mendoza to the Raiders, first round pick. Things have changed. I know you got an interesting draft story. 80, I think it was 84, first round supplementary, but you started in the USFL. That folded. You can't. I think you signed a kind of at the time a record deal. Give me just a snapshot of your draft experience.
Sam Weiss was the head coach of Cincinnati Bengals, had the first draft choice that year and came out to BYU to work me out and then finished the workout and said, look, we're going to draft you number one. And at the same time, the USFL had hit its little 3-year peak where it was legit. I mean, they had playing big stadiums and a lot of young, you know, Herschel Walker, Reggie White, like a lot of guys were leaving college and going there. And I was getting recruited in LA by Don Klosterman, who had just left the LA Rams to run the LA Express. And John Hadle, the famous Charger quarterback, was the head coach. And Sid Gilman, who's this 80-year-old guru of the forward pass, was the offensive coordinator. And we were working out at the Manhattan Beach Elementary School. And everyone else on the team was 22, 23 years old. And the idea was you could go to the USFL, play, and if it gets folded in the NFL, great. And if it doesn't, you'll come out a free agent and go wherever you want. And so I chose to do that instead of go to Cincinnati and back up Kenny Anderson. And the thing that went wrong in my draft analysis was that the NFLPA would make a deal with the NFL, and all the USFL guys like Reggie White and myself would end up going into the supplemental draft that they had for USFL players that I did not expect. And that's where I was the number one pick to Tampa Bay instead of Cincinnati. And ended up, when the USFL did fold, I ended up in Tampa Bay. And the next year they drafted Bo Jackson, because we were the worst team in the league. They drafted Bo Jackson. And I have a great story there. Bo Jackson comes down for a, you know, kind of an interview recruiting trip, come, you know, have signed for the Bucks instead of going to baseball. And the owner, Hugh Colbert, said, Steve, can you come to dinner with Bo Jackson? We've got to try to convince him to come to the Bucks. I'm like, yeah, man, I need some help. Like, come on down. Like, let's go to. So we go to dinner at the steakhouse. Bo's there. I meet him. Hey, he's really cool. We're laughing and talking. And then the owner says, look, after we say hello, I'm going to leave for a minute, say I have a phone call, and you guys talk and, like, you know, seal it up. I'm like, okay, I got you. So the owner says, oh, I got to look. He excuses himself. And then before I can say a word, Bo turns over and says, hey, by the way, I'm never coming here. So don't even try it. I'm just here for the free steak. I'm here for the free steak. So that's Bo and I have become friends through the years ever since then. We've laughed about that. But that's my crazy, convoluted draft story through the years.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. 49ers.com, I think you do a lot of work with them nowadays. And just, you know, when we kid and we talk about the old days and the get off my lawn, at this stage of my life, it's like, you know, baseball's been my whole life. And just like football's been a huge part of your life. And I remember, you know, my grandpa would always say, well, you know, he'd have stories for me. I was tight with my grandpa, and he'd be like, yeah. And he'd really comment on the modern day player. And he'd say, yeah, that Randy Johnson. I said, Gramps, I said, Randy Johnson's pretty good. He's like, hey, he's no Bob Feller. You know, that was my grandpa, and that's how they were back then. And he was that get off my lawn guy. Like, when we played, it was better. Nowadays, you know, I look at it from a different perspective. My time's over. It's the current players. It's their game. You know, you get it. I'm sure in football, you always get the, what are the unwritten rules? Well, baseball unwritten rules were big when I played. It's like an eye for an eye. We manage each other. We police ourselves. You do something wrong, you're going to get one in the neck. And then you're going to tip your cap and we're going to move on and we're square. Not so much anymore. It's different. And at first I kind of fought that, like, well, they've got to do it like we did it. But then I thought, who am I to say that? My time's over. It's going to be what they want it to be. This is a new generation. History will judge us all and which generations were the best. But I've kind of learned to kind of accept it and just kind of roll with it. It's like, this is the way it is. You know, my time last year going back and being a hitting coach in this generation, definitely different than when I was coming up. But I really enjoyed the guys. The kids were, they were great. And they all wanted to hear about our crazy stories. We were talking about what it was like. And I told them at one point, I said, you know, I'm not like 106 years old. I was playing 15 years ago. They act like they're talking to Babe Ruth.
I know.
Not from a talent perspective, just an age. I said, you know, a guy, Justin Verlander, came up and they were talking to me about Verlander. I said, you realize that I was facing Verlander when he was 21 years old and was throwing way harder than he throws now. So don't tell me you guys throw it harder now. So, I mean, that was the back and forth that we have. But I really kind of embrace it. You know, at first, all this showboating, and it kind of was like MLB started doing what the NFL did. And we're going to do a dance when we get a base hit. And my generation, you didn't do that. You just didn't do it. And at first, I was kind of like, what's he do? You know, now it's just kind of, that's the way it is. And if the pitcher doesn't mind, who am I to sit home, you know, in front of the TV and be the critic on how things should be? You're around the game a lot. Have you learned to just, hey, it's not my time anymore. I just roll. These guys are different. I'm sure they're different in the NFL than when you played. But it is what it is, and you embrace it because it's a great game.
The biggest change, Fred, probably for baseball is the clock and different things that have come into the game that structurally change the game, right? And that's different. And that's what happened to football, but a much more dramatic way. In an effort 10 years ago to try to make the game safer, the league changed the rules to not allow defenders to lead with their head. And if you think about, if you're going to, think about chasing down a ball in the outfield, and what if you couldn't dive to get the ball? You had to come feet first to get the ball. You couldn't cover nearly as much ground, right? So you can see the idea of once those rules changed, that defenders no longer could patrol as much space as violently as they had in the past. And so when that changed, to me, it was that's the two things that really changed since I played. That's the biggest change. And the way it was described to me, and what I thought I saw, I asked Tom Brady once at the end of his career when he was in Tampa before a Monday night game. And I said, Tom, you know, it looks to me like everything has, there's just more space. It slowed the game down. Despite all the speed on the field, there's just, they can't patrol as much. He goes, Steve, it's incredibly different. The flat is always open. The middle of the field is unpatrolled, where that's where in the middle of the field in the old days, you'd get yourself killed in there. You'd be super careful catching a ball in there and throwing a ball in there. Since it's unpatrolled and no one can hit me. That's an overstatement, but the idea is that defenders have had to change the way that they tackle a quarterback because you got to be super careful about it. And so that's, to me, that's the biggest change. And that's why I can actually say, look, game before those rule changes and the game after are just a different game. It's not the football that we knew. And that's why I have to just accept it too. It's like, would I love to play quarterback today? Oh, I mean, why did Tom Brady play his 45? Why is Peyton Manning so pissed because his arm quit working and he had to give up? Aaron Rodgers refuses to give up. Like Drew Brees almost, you know, like don't give in because it's so much easier. Matthew Stafford is one of the guys that learned in a more sophisticated time. He's like, let me play in today's game. Today's game is amazing. I'm not going to say it's easier because that's a stupid word. It's different and it's better. Yeah. It's better for quarterbacks. It is a game made for quarterbacks. And the second big change that I have to accept is that the game I played back in the 90s that you talk about, I was a weirdo. I was an oddity. Not only was I left-handed, which was weird, I was a guy that scrambled around, right? I was, after the play broke down, I would go run around. And that was really looked frowned on. It was like, dude, that's not prototype. That's not going to win. That can't be, you know, and I had to put up with my whole career. And so now today's game is my, like the future became my game. Now everyone has to be able to run around. There are so many extra yards because of the rule change that you said for quarterbacks to go get with their legs. First downs, touchdowns. Like if you don't can't go get those, you're not going to be in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is proving that. Josh Allen's proving that. Like name it. And the only ones that are getting there without it are the guys that learn this more sophisticated thing like Matthew Stafford. Sam Darnold's got to go get those yards. Like you just can't do it without going to get those yards. And so in that way, the game doesn't feel further away from me. It feels closer. And that's what is unnerving for me. It's like
you were born at the wrong time.
Yeah. This is like, this is my, I'm not, you mean I'm not weird? I'm not crazy. I'm like, I'm now the prototype. That's what's hard for me right now. It's like, this is the future came to me. I was like, this is my game. This is the game I want to play. And when I watch it, I'm like, oh, what I could have been, Brett. What I could have been.
What I could have been. I'd have been a double Hall of Famer.